Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and welcome back, 2016. This is our first show in quite a few weeks, and I'm really excited to start the year strong. We have a very special guest in the studio today. We have Camilla Lunelli from Ferrari Winery. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
These are fantastic wines from the Trento area, Trento DOC, as you'll hear her refer to them later in the show. DOC, something that you hear Italians say. We usually say DOC here in the States, and it's kind of an emerging area for beautiful sparkling wines. But before we get to that, if you like this show, you can always listen to us on Heritage Radio Network's website every Wednesday morning live at 10 a.m. Or please do subscribe to us on iTunes, where you can also find all of the past episodes. Ferrari wines you can find at our restaurant Lartuzzi down on West 10th Street between Bleecker and Hudson. We also have them in some beautiful magnums, large formats, delicious sparkling wines, something unique, not Prosecco, not Franciacorta, the Trento DOC from Trentino Alto Adige up in the north. These alpine, mountain, delicious wines. Excited to have Camilla here on the show today. So welcome to Heritage Radio. It's exciting to have you.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's a real pleasure for me.
So tell us a little bit about Trento DOC. I think that it's, in terms of Italian sparkling wines, it's one that not too many people are familiar with. I think that even in our more sophisticated listeners here, I can pretty securely say that.
Well, I must say that the Trento DOC, the appellation is quite recent, so the name is not so widely known. But we have made the history of sparkling wine in Italy, because as Ferrari, we started our history more than a century ago. It was 1902 when a young boy called Giulio Ferrari started studying in Italy first, Germany and France, and had this bright intuition that Trentino, due to his mountains, was perfectly suited for producing high-class Metodo Classico sparkling wine. So the history of Ferrari and Trento DOC is a long one, and I must say that we have an important role in Italian sparkling wine.
Wow. And so what makes this a unique area? It's certainly maybe in terms of the temperatures may be similar to Champagne, but this is an alpine area. You're at high altitudes, right? Steep vineyards. So different territory than the only other place that I know of that was making consistent high quality Metodo Classico or Champagne method sparkling wines when Giulio Ferrari thought of this idea over 100 years ago.
Exactly. Actually, when Giulio Ferrari was studying in Champagne, he had this intuition that his homeland of Trentino was completely different in a way, but similar in another. That means that we're more than 1,000 kilometers southern than Champagne, but due to the altitude and so to the mountains, we could have similar conditions. This means that we have a strong diurnal shift in temperature. We have, most of all during the summer, we have warm days and chilly nights, and this is key for Chardonnay, most of all, to develop a rich bouquet and intense aromas and the freshness and elegance that we want to find in the glass.
So was this the start of Metodo Classico in Trento when Giulio brought it, or were other people producing wine in this style at that time?
No, this was absolutely a start, and it was also a revolution in Italian viticulture, because Giulio Ferrari was the first to bring Chardonnay to Italy. If you think now of the great expression of Chardonnay that we have in Italy from Trentino down to Sicily, that really changed the face of Italian viticulture.
Also, he's the one to blame for all of the bad Chardonnay as well. You know, the thing that I really love about this wine, and we're actually lucky for me, sipping some Ferrari Brut in the glass right now. A great way to start the morning. The thing I love about this, as opposed to what you see in Franciacorta, and I'm sure you have to be political and not say anything, but the acidity, this has much higher acidity to me than those wines. My mouth is watering. This is just a joyful thing to start the morning with. I would assume that is from that high altitude or that diurnal shift that's making this so refreshing.
Exactly. We go back to the point. Mountain is really the key feature for the elegance of Ferrari and Trento DOC wines. That's also why we don't use any grape coming from vineyards which are in the bottom of the valley, because we don't have that diurnal shift in temperature. We need to be at least 350, 400 meters above sea level. And the last vineyard we planted in the last 10 years go up to 700 meters. And that's also an insurance for us on the future, because we need the acidity, the freshness that you appreciated to have complex and long-lasting wine. But if global temperature will grow higher, that could be a great threat. It's like champagne houses going northern. What we do is we go higher, so we're safe. Mm-hmm. For sure, growing vines in high altitude is a tough job. It's really hard. The production goes down and you cannot mechanize. There are a number of problems, but we're going to face that in the name of quality.
And what is the actual landscape like as you go further up? I imagine it becomes... Just please tell us, what's the soil like? How does it change from the 300, 400 meter as you ascend the mountain and go higher?
I would really like to take you to Trentino and show you how beautiful our mountain is. It's
okay,
not easy
sure.
to. The invitation is valid for all of those listening, and for you for sure as well. No, it's as I said, it gets harder. But we have to do it. I mean, there's no way. The real, what we learned from Giulio Ferrari is that quality has to be our key driver. We took the chance of increasing production compared to what he was doing without compromising quality. If we're son of the land, we're son of the climate, we cannot decide on that. So if the climate gets warmer, we have to go high.
And so your last name is not Ferrari, but it's Lunelli. Right, and so tell us the story about Giulio Ferrari and his friend Lunelli and how your family got involved in this.
Yes, Giulio Ferrari had no children, so the small winery that he founded in 1902 was kind of like his creature. He's really dedicated all of his life to it. But at a certain stage, he started to wonder who could continue his venture. He had a number of proposals also from very important companies at that time. But among all the proposals, he chose my grandfather, Bruno Lunelli, who was actually had the wine store, best wine store in Trento. So he was a client of Giulio Ferrari, but most of all, he had a very deep admiration for his wines. And what probably Giulio Ferrari saw in my grandfather was the sharing of his value, the fact that he was from Trentino and linked to his territory, and also probably the fact that in 1952, when when he sold the company, my father had already five children. So he also foresaw a family continuity that he could not provide to his company. As of today, myself and my cousins and my brother represent the third generation. So actually, that was a correct intuition that he had.
And what did your grandfather start doing as he took over? Did he make changes immediately? I know that the Ferrari today is quite different from Giulio's time.
Yes and no, it's different. It's different because numbers have changed completely, and that was due to the entrepreneurial spirit that my grandfather had. Him and Giulio Ferrari kept working together for more than 10 years. So Giulio was on the production side, he was the enologist, he was taking care of the vineyards, and my grandfather was more on the commercial side. But the winery grew consistently, but the values, I want to stress, are exactly still the same that Giulio Ferrari had, including the focus on the vineyards. There are some wineries who think that you make an excellent wine in the winery. That's the knowledge is the winemaker making the excellent wine. We have a different approach. We think that you make an excellent wine in the vineyards. Then you don't have to make any mistake in the winery. But that's really a focus that we'd still maintain.
Well, and that's actually one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on the show today, is your focus on the vineyards and your change towards sustainability and emphasis on biodiversity. Can you tell us what was the reason, or who was the person who really initiated the move towards sustainability in your vineyards, and how did that start, and how did that actually happen?
Well, that's due to my cousin Marcello, who's our winemaker, and he also supervises all the agronomist part. But it's something that all of the family shared, and all of the people working with us embraced with a great enthusiasm. So what we did is starting to change completely the paradigm of cultivating our vineyards in our own estate vineyards. So for a number of years, we did many tries, until when we found what we thought was the right balance and the right indication to give to the vine growers who work with us. Just to give you a picture, we produce by our own estate vineyards all the vintage wine, the reserve. But due to the number of bottles we produce per year, we also created in the years a number of a network of vine growers. It's 500 families from Trentino who not only sell their grapes to us, because it's not just a matter of selling. It's really a partnership and a collaboration. We provide consulting. We provide training to them. We have 8 people just dedicated to follow and supervise them. So due to the mutual respect and that we created over the years, they've been followed this shift to sustainability that we proposed to them with great enthusiasm.
So you're telling these growers, 500 of them, that we have an idea and you're going to change everything you've been doing for the last however many years. And you're saying they immediately said, sure, like, let's do this.
Not immediately, but it took us three to four years
okay.
to convert all of their vineyards to a completely different production method, which is very, very short time, because, you know, the times in agriculture are
slow. You said
you had
a team of 8 people who came and would help them with all the issues with converting.
Yeah, we also have training sessions. Yeah. Also during the winter, we get all of them also theoretical session, not only those in the vineyards. So we really provide a lot of training on that. The reason why I think they followed us so easily is on one side, as I said, because there's a previous relationship, very close relationship and cross esteem, but also because the reason why we started all of this project is, on one side, to further enhance the quality of our grape, which is our main work. Secondly, for sure, it came from a broader approach and environmental sensitivity. But the third objective is to have a healthier environment for people working in the vineyards. And these people, these growers, are the ones who are mm-hmm. every day in the vineyards, the ones who could breathe product which are not so healthy. So I think that this aspect has also been key for them in changing their approach.
Well, you know, if you have one grower who has maybe a small 5-hectare plot of land and is doing the most natural thing, or is converted to a very natural way, that's great. But if you have 500 growers, right, that must have had such a huge impact in the general health of the entire area. I imagine that this would be hundreds of acres, or, you know, and have you noticed changes? Does the air smell cleaner since then? I would think that would be quite a bit of a drastic change for the environment in that area.
Let me tell you, we're extremely proud of this, not only for our winery, but really for all the territory, because there's also an impact not only for people working in the vineyards, but also for all of those living around, you know, in Trentino, the area that you can, where you can live and cultivate are very small due to the mountains. So we have villages which are just next to the vineyards. So it's, I think it has been very beneficial for everyone living in
and
the
area. And just on a, like a simple, like an operations and practicality question, have the like pesticide companies like started to send you hate mail, or did they just convert and now they try to sell you organic pesticides?
No, we have had no menaces just, of any kind, yeah. As far as I know.
It's good to know. And just tell us two words. We have to go for a break in a second about the Fari Brut, which I've been enjoying during this first segment. It's such a delicious wine, the white label Fari Brut.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us just about, so this is one of the wines that's made from the many growers.
Exactly. Right? It's 100% Chardonnay, mm-hmm. but coming from all the network of growers we were talking about.
Great. All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more of Camilla Lunelli of Ferrari Winery.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit wholefoodsmarket.com to find a store closest to you.
All right, we are back with Camilla Lunelli of Ferrari Winery up in the Trento Dock, an emerging sparkling wine growing area up in northern Italy in the Dolomite Mountains. 41 different wineries in the area, though hundreds of growers supplying them. But definitely Ferrari Winery has led the way in terms of letting people know about the high-quality wines of this area, and I was really enjoying that Ferrari Brut. Still, like, the acidity is still in my mouth in the most pleasant way. Before the break, we were talking about Ferrari's big initiative to convert their 500 growers and their estate winery to completely sustainable practices. But we didn't really get into the details. I'd love to know, what does that actually mean? What have you done? Is it just getting rid of chemicals, or is there something more beyond that?
The idea is really to go and build on natural fertility of the land. What we did in very practical terms, we banned herbicides, we banned all chemical fertilizer, we adopted natural methods for fighting insects. So the paradigm shift has been complete, but as I said, we've been followed by our vine growers very, very easily.
Great. And then the emphasis on biodiversity, how does that actually come into play? Are you having people plant different things between the vines? What is actually happening?
Exactly. When we talk about natural fertility of land, for instance, green manure is a very simple technique. It's a traditional technique, but which is very impactful. So we do plant different seeds in between the vines. That helps with controlling herbs that we don't control with the herbicides anymore. That can give richness to the soil whenever it's needed. Or it can take off depending on the kind of soil. So we really want to create a balance between the vine and its own land. Then we also widened our perspective, and that's where the issue of biodiversity comes in. Because when we talk about organic certification, we mainly focus about what's about the vine and what's inside the vineyard. With a biodiversity perspective, we have a wider approach. We also look at what's around the vineyard. Just to give you an idea, We got last year the certification by the Biodiversity International Association of Biodiversity Friend. This certification takes into account also some elements which are not strictly monitored by the organic certification, like the quality of waters around the vineyards, like the quality of air around the vineyards, and the numbers of both vegetal and animal species which are inside the soil and around the vineyards. So it's a wider perspective.
I love this idea. You're actually our second biodiversity friend. We had Ronki Di Chala on a few weeks ago. That might have been the last or second to last episode before we left. And to me, that's the most important thing. The measure of the overall health of the area is more important than anything else, because that tells you, you know, what is your actual impact? How healthy is the air, the soil, the water? One thing that I meant to ask him that I didn't get to is I know that the microbial activity, the biological activity in the soil, how much life is in the soil, is a way that a lot of people measure the general health of the soil. Is that something that you guys think about or is considered in this biodiversity friend program?
It's absolutely one of the measures, but as I said, soil is important for sure, it's key, but it's not the only part that we're going to measure, because air is important, water is important as well. We want to have a complete picture of what happens.
I guess as a wine lover, I think so much about soil is having such a big impact. Well, what about the birds and flying insects? Is that something that you guys consider? I imagine that with less chemicals flying around, then there would be, my guess is that there would be more birds and flying insects coming in.
Absolutely. Trentino has been a pioneer in using a sexual confusion also for fighting insects. And we also do insert some specific, I don't want to go too much into technical, but we also sometimes treat our vineyards by inserting specific insects that fight some kind of diseases. And again, we place little nests around the vineyards for having birds to fight insects that we don't want to fight with chemical.
So you're creating a natural ecosystem rather than spraying a chemical. You create the predators and prey, and you get the predators in to get rid of the stuff you don't want.
Exactly. And another key element on that, which I know has got a lot of attention also from Obama's administration recently in the U.S., are bees. That looks so simple because we're all used to, we all know bees. But just recently, attention on the importance of bees for agriculture has been brought to the center stage. So what we do is that we have placed hives. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for. We placed hives all around our vineyards, and that helps enormously to increase the biodiversity in the vineyard.
Okay, so that makes sense, because the unique thing about the grapevine is that it's self-pollinating, right? So you don't actually need bees or something, another insect to pollinate the flowers. But this I never thought of, all of the other plants that are around that you want to be doing great and adding to biodiversity do need that. So so that's really interesting. And certainly bee populations are greatly decreasing here in the U.S. I don't know if you're having the same struggles in...
That's why, even from a political point of view, there's an attention on that.
And do you produce estate honey as well?
Well, not estate, but for the family, we do have some, okay. And it's really good.
Wow. Okay, so what is in our glass now? This beautiful bottle of Perle?
Exactly.
Perle?
Ferrari Perle is, honestly, I would say it's the wine of my heart. That's what is never missing in my fridge for any occasion. It's a wine that I love because I think it's fresh, it's pleasant. Still, it already has such a nice complexity. You have the fruity note that you already found in the Ferrari Brut, the golden apple note, that primary aroma that comes from Chardonnay. But given to the fact that we have a long aging period on lease, because it's at least 6 to 7 years, wow, you have a further complexity, the yeasty note. So it's really a wine.
And this is a 2007 vintage. And this is always a vintage declared wine. You always have one vintage on it.
Yeah. Exactly. And we just use our estate grape for that.
And is there a great amount of vintage diversity between year to year, or is it pretty consistent?
Well, I would not say it's a huge diversity, but still you can tell the difference. That's mm-hmm. also why we don't produce Giulio Ferrari Riserva del Fondatore, which is our top cuvée. We don't produce that every year because there's a variability in climate. It's normal. We work with agriculture, and that's part of the game.
Is it fair to say, so this is, as I said, 2007, this is really delicious. Is it fair to say in years that you don't produce the Giulio Ferrari, maybe those grapes would go into the Perlet? And
exactly.
That would be a really good vintage to find some Perlet.
This Perlet 2007 has been named the World Champion Sparkling Wine last year in London by the Champagne and Sparkling Wine World Championship. So it's really a wine and vintage we're very proud of.
Well, I can see why. I mean, on the nose, it's much more brooding and darker and nuttier than just the Ferrari Brut, but on the palate, it still has that brightness and great acidity and delicious.
You know, what we see is that the bottle becomes always empty with this wine, and I think it's a good sign. It's really, it's so pleasant that you feel like having another glass, and that's a success for a wine producer.
Yeah, and what's in the future? What are the initiatives that you're working on now for the future of Ferrari?
Well, in terms of wine production, we always have a number of experimentation mm-hmm. which are going on because, you know, the cycle of life of a product for us is so long, it's at least 10 to 15 years, so we need to have a number of experimentation going on, and then we decide if it's ready or not for meeting the market. In terms of promotion of Ferrari, for sure we're placing a great effort on building the brand outside of Italy because we're extremely strong in Italy, but we have to bring that, and we're glad to promote Ferrari all over the world as an expression of the Italian art of living, being ambassador of Italian lifestyle. And I must say that we find great interest and great passion for this all over the world, so that helps a lot.
Yeah, if here in the States we think of the Italian lifestyle as being more of a relaxed and enjoyable one than we have, certainly drinking some of this would fit really nicely into that. Have you ever driven a Lamborghini?
Not really. Not even a Ferrari.
Not even a Ferrari.
That's the next question.
There's no relation whatsoever with the Ferrari cars.
No, yeah. Think that we were born in 1902. Yes. There were not many cars around at that age.
Yeah.
But for sure, Ferrari cars built an incredibly strong brand, and they're an icon of the best made in Italy. So we're very glad to share the name with them. We have very nice relationship. We have an historical photo galleries of Ferrari pilot toasting with our wines, and we've always had good relationships. So we're glad of that. But on the other hand, we're a family company. We have a long history, so we also are proud of our identity, and we want to stress that we're a different, completely different company.
As you should be. These are absolutely beautiful wines. As I said, you can get the Ferrari Brut at Lartuzzi. We are proud to serve it. Congratulations on all of your efforts for sustainability and just making really delicious wine. Thank you so much, Camilla.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's Camilla Lunelli of the Ferrari Winery up in Trento Dock, an emerging area for high-quality sparkling wine. Look out for wines from that area. I wanted to give a big thank you to Jack Inslee. It's always great work with you. Thank you so much for putting the show together. As every week, you are the absolute best. Thanks to everyone at Heritage Radio Network, Aaron Fairbanks, Allison. You guys are all amazing. We love you. And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.